e i o matua te kore, anei rā tō moko puna. Hono ai te ao tawhito ki te ao hau, kia ako ai te ao whānui, i ngā tāngo ngā mahi puoro e.
Listening to the morning show, and in the studio I have Ngaronora Nata. Good morning.
Ai, ata mari e koutou mā. Ko te kaupapa o tēnei rangi, ko te nā taonga puoro.
And who were we just listening to?
Ah.
Who and what?
So we were listening to Horo Mona Horo, who is a very seasoned practitioner of taonga puoro. And the instrument that he was playing for us was the putatara. Now, the thing with the putatara is it's a combination of wood and a conch, a shell. So traditionally, the shells were both from the North Island and the South Island, unique to either island. And then because a mouthpiece has been added from Tāne Mahuta, from the forest, from the great forest, Te Wao Nui a Tāne, it then becomes known as a putatara for that reason. So that's what you just had an inspiration of turning your ears towards that oro. So the words taonga puoro, oro being sound, taonga, treasure, those physical instruments that or things that are made from natural materials, and in more recent times the exploration into non-natural materials to make taonga puoro,
to produce the similar sounds.
There's a wide-ranging group of sounds. However, what's unique from my experience with taonga puoro and what you would call orchestral is one instrument, a musician would adopt one instrument as being their primary instrument, like the flute, the guitar, oboe, a stringed instrument, a violin.
Yeah.
And on that instrument they would play a variety of notes that can be notated in Western notation. Taonga puoro can do that. However, you also, within that framework of using that way of recording the particular sound according to Western notation, you would miss the many harmonics that are the richness of the body of sound that comes from taonga puoro.
Yeah, and I think Western musicians, they miss that as well, but it comes to the interpretation of the performer.
Oh, it's an integral part of taonga puoro. It's not a...
It's the interpretation or the...
The actual sound qualities.
Yeah.
What I've learned very recently is the sound engineers who are the best in the Western world, which their their microphones come from Germany.
Yeah.
They actually had a session with Horomona.
Yeah.
And the particular person who is responsible for those mics that can capture sound, and he was so excited because he did not have a microphone that could capture
right.
the actual breadth this of what Horomona was playing, and he was just so excited because he said, "Oh, I have work to do."
And yes, you know, a new challenge.
He was very challenged by that, and that was the inspiration that we understood was these sounds cannot be captured by one expensive top class microphone in a studio, and we have yet to find, you know, that takes multiple times and to actually capture that, to capture the oro.
Mm. I haven't had taonga puoro in the studio, but I did have someone play a didgeridoo a few years ago, and I discovered that had a quality, because we've all heard recordings of didgeridoo, they're famous, but to have it in the studio, there was a three-dimensional quality to the sound that I couldn't explain except by saying it had this three-dimensional quality, and you can't hear it over a microphone. So I completely understand what you're saying. there are things that that are in the air, you can feel it, but the microphone doesn't know what to do with it.
What we're doing currently in terms of an organisation called Oro Māori is we are forwarding the work of taonga puoro, which really has sat with only a few practitioners. Mm. It's been accessible. So one of our key inspirations is to develop it so that it becomes more available to people within their homes through either attending a wānanga where they make a taonga puoro and know the history, know the whakapapa of the instruments that they're, you know, making or growing, as with Hine Pūtehue, the hue, the gourds, the taha, calabash, has many names, so that it's accessible and able to access the sound, because the sound has an extraordinary healing qualities.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learnt working with our sound engineer Jamie in the studio is as each sound is made and recorded, it's colour coded. It comes up on her soundboard.
Yeah.
In different, so it actually what they call sits in different colours, which is fascinating, because it's just what we know that, but she can tell us that technically that instrument produces a high pitch and it sits here in this vortex of sound.
And so that's an attempt to make sense of or reproduce the sound as accurately as possible. She's had to develop quite a complex system.
Well, it's a sound, I mean, she's a sound engineer, so we're in a sound, in a studio where we're recording, and we found that out. We actually found that that's exactly what we want to know. We want to know the Western technology that can capture it, and what are they capturing, and what is that information that they've got, and we translate that and can write that back and say, no, this is how it works. This is what this sound actually produces. Evidence, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Evidence
that the scientific world likes to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
we're about that, you know. We can navigate those worlds. We know it in terms of indigenous mātauranga knowledge,
yeah.
But we want to also integrate that with technology as it is available to us today, and make provings of that so that not only people who need to know that mentally can have that information, but we can also invite people to have particular instruments that we feel would be suitable for what they're looking for. So that, you know, as you said, you know, we bring in the didgeridoo, we bring in, you know, the Tibetan singing bowls, but we,
yeah,
Oro Māori, bring in what's here already. We're pulling, you know, we're telling that story in another way so that there's more information available. Podcasts, there'll be podcasts available. Sound, there'll be, you know, once the work in the studio is completed, will never be completed, it'll be an ongoing adventure and expression. But there's so much for us to capture right now, so we're very excited about potential of that. And I just perhaps like to share with you one of those instruments, which comes from, it's called a, its general name is called Pupu Harakeke. And it's like this. So the Pupu Harakeke originates for me from Ngāti Kuri, which is the top of the North Island. It has a pūrākau, which is a story, a big story,
yeah,
about its gift and how the Ngāti Kuri people know of or it's part of their knowledge. And this seemingly simple shell is not found everywhere.
So this is a shell, but it has the name Harakeke in it, which makes me think of flax.
So it hangs out. It hangs out on the flax. Ah. So flax was traditionally what we would call the fence around a pa site.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the far north, that wasn't uncommon for the Harakeke to be the fence line around where, you know, the pa, where the tribe lived.
So is there anything been done to the shell, or you just know how to use it to make the sound?
Yeah, no, nothing's been done to this Pupu Harakeke. It's some instruments are like that they're in their original form, and then it's really the application of the ability of the artist to be, or person to be able to access the sound. This is one of many.
Is it somewhat like trying to play a flute, which most people can't just pick up a flute and use it? They need help to start with.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm probably quite seasoned in the flute, in the Western classical flute, because I also learnt that. And I read music. I read Western classical music because I trained in northern New South Wales. There was a time when I did that and played lots of flute music. it's all about I learned about the embouchure. It's the way you hold your mouth, the way that you actually access your own breath, the ha, from your body to engage with the instrument. And in terms of the Western classical flute, then the many sounds, the scale, the actual scale that you're progressing to sharpen, so that it sharpen in a sense that it's accurate.
But for the flute, you're using your fingers to change the pitch. But here with the shell, you don't have that.
No, opportunity, no. That one of the one of the peculiarities or features, one of the features of taonga puoro is a taonga puoro player could have one instrument. In more recent times, since the renaissance of taonga puoro through the late Hidini Melbourne, he was a key person in who we attribute the renaissance of taonga puoro, or the playing of and a lot of the knowledge. It's you have several instruments from made from stone, bone, you know, the bone of the tohora, of the whale bone, of a cow bone as well. Deer bone has been used, wooden, of wood, or shell. And, of course, our this is a very simple but classical, very small gourd.
Smaller, the size of a tennis ball, if you want to know, folks. Something like, a bit smaller than that.
Yes. And you can actually place what they call holes in it, like you do in a normal flute, or you can. This one doesn't.
Oh, this one doesn't. How were you playing it? I couldn't work out how you were playing it. I'm watching you, and I'm not sure what you're doing.
It's been disputed that Māori had a nose flute. Well, let me just confirm that we've always had a nose flute.
And that's, yeah, because it was up to your nose. So you're blocking one nostril and it's coming out the other one across the face of the
Yes, it is. The gourd. That also is a technique that you would learn if you were akin to it, or become very frustrated that you couldn't play it. like a Western classical flute, you know. You persevere through being shown and taught, and you access your own ha, your own breath, to master, to become a master, if you choose to be, of that instrument, you know, a player, and you know, that's perseverance, or you give up at some point.
Yeah, well, we'll have things like that. You also have, there's a third, I think, yeah, a third, I presume this is an instrument. See, I don't recognize these kinds of instruments.
Yeah, so this particular instrument, which I brought into the studio, I brought it here because it's, you know, it's the, it reminds me of the origins of our taonga pūoro, is known as Hine Raukitauri. And Hine Raukitauri is the goddess of flute music. And it's a wind instrument. I'm not going to play it on this particular setup. I'm wanting you to be exposed to very high quality exposure. So at some point, when we can find a recording that can give us that, which maybe next time.
can I describe? We have a wooden implement. It's in a tube shape, well, not a perfect tube. Like it's diminishing at either end.
Yes, and it has three openings, one smaller, one larger, and one in the middle.
So that's openings at the ends and one in the middle.
And you access the sound of each part of the instrument through that, and they have a very different presence, sound vortex that they offer. So the goddess of flute, Hine Raukitauri, is also in herself a very amazing story of resilience.
How did they make that's a traditional instrument?
Yes, that's a traditional instrument.
How did they make that with, because I can't figure out how you'd make that without quite complicated tools.
Yes, well, Māori did have quite complicated tools that most craftsmen today wouldn't be able to work with, because it requires you to pay attention to different techniques. Mm. So a sharpening tool, for instance, was the obsidian. Obsidian is known, it's so sharp, it's sharper than glass.
Yeah.
But so if you're not apt at being in your workshop or wherever you are making your instruments, you would cut yourself. Definitely. So Māori made instruments that were quite extraordinary out of bone, out of different types of kohatu, rock, and they were bound together in a certain manner with muka thread, That's a taonga puoro.
So I'm just looking at, this is incredible. This is a photo of, this is like a jewel.
Yes, that's
version
a,
of what I was just I was just describing something that was kind of tubular with the tapering off at either end. So this appears to be made from one piece of wood, and it's two tubes, and tube doesn't really do it justice, but two tubes that join up again at either end with a gap in the middle. That takes an incredible level of craftsmanship to produce something like that. I can't even imagine how it's done.
Yeah, yeah. So our whakairo artists, those who were apt at working with pounamu, wood, yeah, bone, had a number of tools that they were very competent in and could make in extremely intricate designs, were actually able to be carved into the body of a piece of wood. So the different types of wood, they weren't just a piece of wood, or they could have been a driftwood, because, you know, the hardwoods were different. So the different natures of wood were well known, and so carving was the carving of them, you know, they knew what they were doing. They knew how they were working with them.
This I've never seen instruments like these, but I don't remember seeing this. This is not,
yeah, it's a whole field.
Yeah, this is not that well known, I'm guessing, at this stage.
And no, and that's what part of our role is to do, is to make it more accessible and demystify.
I wish people could see the photos I'm looking at. There's some incredible craft gone into these instruments.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite something. Actually, they're extraordinarily... The ones held in museums, the putorino.
Are these in museums in this country?
No, generally... a good amount of our history is held within the bowels of significant museums and not so significant museums, and they're never seen by the naked eye.
So these are in Europe, probably.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
We do know some of the places that they're held. The repatriation of them is really essential to what we call the well-being of our people, so that we, like you say, we go, really? These were made pre-European? Yep, they were made pre-European.
You can tell by the design that they're not of any other culture. They're from a Polynesian culture. Like, I'm just looking at line drawings here.
Yes.
You know, and immediately you know that it's from this part of the world.
Yes, I had the good fortune of studying under the late Hilary Melbourne at Te Whare Wānanga o Waikato, the University of Waikato, when he was there himself, managing a number of really important papers. And Ngā Taonga Whakatangitangi was, you had to be in your second year of study to even go on to the program. So while I was there, little did I realise the importance of that time frame that we had with Hirani. And also, I'm just thinking, what is his name? He's written a bit. Brian Flintoff,
yeah,
who did a lot of the whakairo. Admittedly, at that time I saw him, he was using a Dremel to carve with.
Yeah.
But you can see that the intricacy of design that was applied to taonga puoro was extensive, yeah, and told stories. And I don't think we've got time in this.
No, I want to do more of this. Rodrigo's here to talk about photography, and I'm actually going to get him to take some photos if he doesn't mind doing it on his on his phone.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Well, a skilled photographer can take photos with anything. So,
oh.
That's my challenge this morning for Rodrigo.
Oh. Okay.
But look, folks, we've been talking to Ngaronoa Renata about taonga puoro, and we've got three instruments here in the studio, none of which I'm familiar with, and this is dead fascinating, just from it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. A hui e iti. So it's a small gourd. There's large gourds. I have a extensive collection. I didn't bring it in.
Yeah. And recordings of other taonga puoro have been made at Is it at the Tech or the University in Hamilton?
Oh, currently we're working in the WinTech studio.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Jamie, a Wahine Māori sound technician. I mihi to Jamie. It's very rare to have a female, let alone a Māori woman, Wahine Māori, in a sound studio as a sound engineer.
Mm.
And so we just so amazing to sit with her and be part of this story going forward. So what the offerings are from Tonga Puro, we probably don't fully know ourselves, except that one of our goals is to demystify this field and to make it more accessible. So people go, oh, I know those instruments.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah because it's all this is all new to me.
You know, Western classical instruments, you can name them, you know?
Yeah,
I can name them because, yeah, I've got extensive background in Western classical music. However, I also now feel more in tune with Tonga, Ngā Tonga Whakatangitangi, Ngā Tonga Puoro from my own people, which is awesome.
All right, folks, yes, we're talking to Ngaronoa. Thank you for coming in. This is really interesting. And we'll put this podcast out, and people should listen because you need to hear the sound, not just read about the sound, to really understand what we're talking about. Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Nga mihi kia koutou, kia haumaru koutou mā, Māori ora.
And we will be talking to Rodrigo about photography in just a moment.